We are quickly approaching the end of 2024. And if you have not purchased an investment property yet this year, and it's been one of your goals, I need you to listen very closely. I know many of you live in areas where it's so expensive and investment properties seem impossible. I'm talking about some of the big cities. So LA, New York City, maybe even Seattle, Atlanta, places in Florida, and the list goes on. If you know that where you live is too expensive, I need you to lock in right now. Investing out of state changed my life as somebody living in California. I now invest in Ohio and I'm growing my portfolio. It's something that's possible. You just need the right information and execution. So if that's you, if you want to learn how to invest out of state, go to outofstatemoney.com and there is a free training that'll outline the steps for you and help you understand exactly what it takes. So go to outofstatemoney.com or simply go to the link in the description of this episode.
All right, everyone, welcome to the Black Real Estate Dialogue, episode 15. The purpose of the Black Real Estate Dialogue is to document the journey of an up-and-coming Black real estate investor and to share the stories of successful Black real estate investors. Shout out to our sponsors, Mint Inc. Mint stands for the Minority Interdisciplinary Networking Team. Mint empowers young minority professionals with an interdisciplinary network for learning, collaboration, and the development of entrepreneurial ventures. You can become a member of their network for free at mintinc-usa.com. You can also follow them on IG at mintinc_USA. Couple quick things before we get into our episode. We've been having a 20% sale on our merch all weekend to celebrate Martin Luther King Day. Today's the last day to get our merch at this price. You can go to gum.co/BRED to get yours today. Shout out to everyone who has purchased their merch and sending in pictures. Definitely appreciate the love. We're also on Twitter. You can follow us at Bread Podcast, BRED Podcast. Take a moment to follow us there. Keep up with us throughout the week. Also, sign up for our email list. By signing up for this list, you'll get discounts, additional content, resources, and our newsletter that'll go out periodically. All that information will be in the show notes. As far as Dayton, all is going well with the property. Figuring out how to finance another one, also working on an LLC. Definitely will keep you all updated. Looking forward to this episode. Let's get into it. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. Very excited about this episode. Here with me today, I have Emmanuel Baker out of Lake Charles, Louisiana. He is part of Pratique Estates, LLC. Emmanuel, thank you so much for joining us today, man.
Hey, thank you. The pleasure is all mine. I'm glad to come on, and this is my first podcast, so I'm pretty excited to let everybody know my story.
Absolutely, absolutely. So first, tell us more about the name. How did you come up with Pratique Estates?
So it's funny. Pratique means handy in French. And so Handy was my grandfather's last name. And my grandfather was very influential in my life as a kid and growing up as an adolescent teenager. And so I wanted to tie my real estate company in with his last name and his legacy somehow. And so I got on Google and I just started looking up different meanings for handy in different languages and trying to tie it in. And I seen Pratique was handy in French and I said, that's it. I mean, it was unique. It was different. And at the end of the day, I knew people would ask me, what does that mean? Because they haven't heard it before. And so it's a brand changer for my brand as well, too. So I was like, yeah, that's it.
Nice, man. Nice. So tell us more about what your childhood was like and what you saw or what you didn't see that eventually shaped your view of building wealth.
Okay. So I come from a two-parent household. Both of my parents work 9-to-5 jobs. But growing up, I seen that my parents also had side hustles and different side businesses they did on the side. And so my dad worked for Chase and General Motors growing up, and my mom worked for a bank, and then she also switched over and started working for home health agencies. And so my mom did decorations for weddings and different events, and she also had an event coordinator business. And so I remember growing up, we used to go to her different events and help her set up with extravagant decorations on the tables, the chair cloths, and different things like that. And I used to just see the process from the beginning to the end, and me not knowingly, I'm seeing the business being ran smoothly. She had some of her friends and coworkers and different people to help her, just pay on everything done efficiently and effectively as possible. And so I was like, wow. And that was like my first kind of introduction to business growing up as a kid. And also my dad, his best friend did taxes. And so my dad started doing taxes as well. His best friend brought him onto his company and taught him. And then he started building up his clientele. So on some weekends, I used to spend some time with my dad at the tax office, filing paperwork and different things like that. And it's kind of cool. I was just happy to spend time with my dad, but he was showing me a little bit of business as well. And so that kind of touched base when I come back and talk about my grandfather. My grandfather was highly influential in my life. Like, he owned the barbershop in Monroe. In the community that I grew up in, it's called Booger T. And my grandfather was highly respected in the neighborhood. He was a politician. He drove the school bus for a school out there. And also, he owned the barbershop. And he sat on the state barber board for about 20 plus years. And he used to come down to Baton Rouge and Lafayette, and they put in Monroe for people who sit for the state exam to become a licensed barber.
Wow.
And so my grandfather, man, he started me off on an entrepreneurship journey as a kid as well. And so I was 10 years old, and I used to go to his barbershop with him all the time. And one day he bought me a shoeshine stand. And he told me, you know, he was going to buy me the shoeshine stand and that he wanted me to shine shoes in the back of the barbershop. You know, I charge people and I come up with my own price list. And so I'm 10 years old. I'm not knowing how much to charge, you know, so I kind of go around asking, and I asked him how much I should charge. And he said, you know, you should do about $5 for both shoes starting off. And so he gave me the whole setup. He gave me the brushes, the polishes and everything, the whole nine yards. So that was my first introduction to entrepreneurship on my own. And I was just excited to be at the barbershop because I used to go there all the time and cut hair. I mean, not cut hair, but all the time and sweep up the hair after my grandfather finishes, wipe the windows and the whole nine yards. But actually being in there and, you know, doing my own little thing, shining shoes, it was pretty dope, man. I had fun doing it for a while.
Wow, that's amazing. So it's kind of, you really had, you know, three very important people in your life, you know, with 9 to 5s, but also with businesses, and you were able to get involved from a kid. You know, you had your own little business, your own business in the barbershop as a kid. So I'm sure, you know, a lot of those things over the years and now in adulthood, you probably see a lot of those lessons you learned back then coming to life now.
Yeah. And also looking at it too, like, so he didn't want me to be stagnant. And so I did the shoe shine business for a while, and then that led to, I had like a little concession stand set up, you know, in the barbershop and in the waiting room for all the people. I had pickles, chips and cookies and the whole nine yards, drinks and stuff like that. And so when people sitting in the waiting room and they bored or they want something, they see, you know, marketing, basically I was marketing to them, because sometimes people don't want stuff until they see it. Their eyes are bigger than their stomach. So they see Kool-Aid pickles or, you know, Doritos on the table. They said, let me get that while they waiting. And so I made a killing, man. It was crazy. And I did that for a few years, and that led me into getting a vending machine.
Wow.
And it's just amazing looking back at it. That whole time I wasn't knowing what my grandfather was doing, but he was introducing me to, you know, entrepreneurship and business and taking it from one level to the next level. And I was just like, man, that's amazing.
Wow. I think that's really cool. Especially if you think about it, your grandfather has a barbershop, you know, people are in there. I mean, he had to be thinking ahead, because people are in there, maybe they're coming from work or church or whatever. They want to get their shoe shine, or they're going to an event, getting cut for an event. They want to get their shoe shine. And then you kind of bought that into the next business, which was selling the snacks. Like you said, people are waiting. They want to munch on something. And then you kind of got to vending machine. So tell us about kind of how that entrepreneurial spirit developed into you getting into real estate.
Okay. Well, like I said, entrepreneurship background, I always wanted to be into real estate as a kid. And so my definition of real estate was kind of different, because I thought you had to become a real estate agent to be into real estate. But growing up, and when I found out that you didn't have to be in it to invest in it, and I was like, wow, that's the route I need to go. Because I didn't want to do the real estate agent route, but I would do it if I had to. And so how I got into real estate was when I first moved to Lake Charles, the rental market was crazy, man. You would think you're in Houston or something. And it's like that because they have a lot of refineries out here. And the market is overpriced because the market, you have a lot of people looking for apartments and houses because they have a lot of contracts out here. And a lot of plants are doing billion-dollar expansions. Wow. And so the market is it's crazy. So they're able to charge however that much they want to charge. And so I had a two-bedroom. I think I was paying like $1,200 for a two-bedroom. And now and for Louisiana, a two-bedroom, it just depends on your area. You're probably looking at about $975, $950. And so that's kind of a $300 almost markup. And so I was like, no, I don't need to do that. And I kind of looked at the rental money that I was giving to my landlord as money I was getting and taking and throwing it in a dumpster because I'd never see it again. Mm-hmm. So I made up in my mind whenever I got that apartment, I only did a 6-month lease. I said, after this 6-month lease up, I'm going to go look for me a personal property for myself. And so that was kind of like my first introduction into real estate, looking for my personal home out here.
Definitely. Tell us more about that first purchase, what that looked like. How much it was and what the process was like for you to find one and all that good stuff.
Okay. So the first purchase, I found the house. I bought it for $80,000 and it was turnkey ready. So I went through a real estate agent out here and she showed me the house and everything and I loved it. But the only thing is I wish I would have been a little bit more aggressive in the process. And so I kind of waited to put my offer in a few days. And it turns out somebody beat me to the punch and they put an offer in. And so I was like, man, that was like my first lesson in the real estate. I was like, man, I thought everybody was on my time, but you got to be aggressive and go after it. And so I immediately started looking for more cribs. But my real estate agent called me and she said, hey, the person that the offer went through, it actually ended up falling through because they didn't have financing. And so they're going to put it back on the market in the next few hours. You need to put an offer in ASAP. And so I immediately told her, put me in at the full $80,000. And we can roll like that. And she said, okay. So she put it in and the offer got accepted. We went back and forth with negotiations on the closing costs. And I got them to pay for the most part all my closing costs. Because if I wanted to go the full route, I wanted to take advantage of that. So I knew they would go, and pay the full closing costs because they got the full asking price. And so the process was kind of hard for me to find lenders because I was going to a lot of banks and asking them and had all my paperwork, but they wanted me to do everything online. And I was like, I listened to a lot of podcasts and read a few books. And I said, no, I want to kind of learn the process and I want to sit in front of somebody to kind of teach me. And so I went to about 3 or 4 banks and finally I went to this lender company that my agent referred me over to. And that's the power of, networking in your team. And so she referred me over to a lending agent and they got me right on in and they coached me from the first step all the way to the end of the result. And it was just amazing, man. And they took care of me. So that was that part of it. And so we get to the closing table and I think I had to pay. I did the FHA loan. And I had to put 3.5% down. And so I think I had to come out of pocket with inspections and everything, maybe no more than $3,500 off of $80,000 purchase.
Wow, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. And was it a single family home?
Yes, it's a single family. And it's a town home. So it's kind of interesting. Kind of like DC up north area. It's kind of row houses. So it's row houses, townhouses in the back of a neighborhood. And that's like 10 to 15 houses right next to each other in the HOA community. But it was pretty dope.
That's awesome. So you got your first house and how did things develop from there? Like what did you end up doing next?
So it's crazy. After I got my first house, man, after doing a little bit more research, I was like, I should have did a multi-family house and stayed in one side and rented the other side out. But I didn't let that get me down. What I ended up doing was doing a little bit more research. And I said, hey, I got a 2-bed, 2-bath house. What I'm going to do is I found house hacking. So I said, I'm going to rent out the other room in my house and stay on the other side and just do house hacking. And so what I do is on the $80,000, I think my note is like $598 with my mortgage and everything. And that's with insurance included because on personal property, your insurance is rolled into your mortgage, but investments is not. So I think I pay like $598 a month. guy that lives in the other room, he pays me $600 every month. So basically what I'm doing is I'm living for free. And so now I'm able to save that $600 a month and start that rolling into investments. Wow. And so that was my first introduction, you know, into real estate. When I first got that $600 check, I was like, man, I got to get more houses.
Yeah. Wow. That's really cool. What I like about that is you got something. When you were in your apartment, you signed a 6-month lease and you said, you know what, after this, I'm getting a house. And I like the fact that you just bought something. Like a lot of people, you know, they may have hesitated. You bought something and you learn. I believe you learn by doing, you learn by taking action. You bought the house, you were reading and everything. You're like, all right, I can make money out of this, even though it's a single family house and you rent the rooms out. So I really like the fact that you didn't get down on yourself for not purchasing what you may have thought. I mean, hindsight is 20/20. It's easy to say, oh, you know, I would have done this, I would have done that. But the important thing is you did something, and that I can. It seems like that kind of got the ball rolling for you.
Right.
Definitely. So what was next? What was next after getting that property, house hacking, renting the rooms out? What were your thoughts after that point as far as growing?
So my thought after that was, man, I need to get the ball rolling in real estate. And so I immediately, you know, started my LLC and started looking for real estate properties in Lake Charles and Monroe and in the Shreveport area. And so my partner, I have a partner, his name is Derek Johnson, Magnolia Johnson Estates. He had already created his LLC and everything and been looking for properties all around Louisiana. And so he came to me with a deal, and he had already had a duplex that he's been looking at, and he brought me into it. He said, hey, we can jump on this thing together. And I said, let's go. So a little bit about that deal is it's a duplex in Shreveport, Louisiana, and the purchase price was $45,000, and we put a $20,000 construction loan in the other side. So the other side needed a lot of work done to it. So we met a GC out there, and he gave us an amazing deal. He worked with us and showed us the entire process. That's still our guy to this day. He did a lot of more work for us. We have an outstanding relationship. Nice. But so we did a $20,000 construction loan and a purchase price of $45,000. So now we all in for $65,000. So it's prominent that the house get appraised for over $65,000 for that loan to go through. And so it was a blessing that we got the house for appraised at $70,000. And so now the deal could go through. And so we came to the table, like all investment properties are 20% down. We came to the table with, I think, $13,000 on that loan. And we secured it. And I think we did about 30 to 45 days on the construction side of the Unit A. And we got it turned over and ready. And so that's one of our best units to this day, because the other unit was already, for the most part, ready. The owner was staying on that side. And then the other side was, for the most part, just needed a full job. And so that's one of our best units to this day.
Wow. And what was it like for you just being someone new working on, like how much work did the property need? And what was that like for you as someone who was pretty new in the game, working with a GC and just making sure things get done?
Man, it was interesting. So I stay about 3 hours from Shreveport. And so I was going out there pretty often just to check on the property on the weekends and check on the status, you know, and just absorbing the process from A all the way to Z and seeing what needs to be done. But I was excited, man. It was my first rehab, you know, first investment property. And so it was mind-boggling, man. I enjoyed every step of the way. But what I also did, too, was I did my research. On the back end, I made sure that, you know, everything that I was doing was, you know, up to code and just following behind the GC, even though he does great work, but we just want to make sure that everybody's aligned and all I's and T's are dotted. And so me and my partner used to just take turns and go out there and just view it. We stay the night out there and then come back in the next morning. And sometimes we got our hands dirty and did a little bit of sweat equity, man. It's just to learn. And see how much we'll go to the store and get materials and see how much, you know, materials cost. So whenever we lead in projects one day, we'll know, you know, sheetrock costs this much, you know, flooring costs this much. And we know, how, you know, we can't get beat on deals because we can say, no, this quote is $1,500, but no, this costs $11, and we'll give you a $300 fee so we can save $100. Because in the real estate game, everybody's, you know, you want to save as much as you can. And so that was very influential in that process of, you know, getting my first investment property.
Wow, that's awesome. I think it's really cool that, you know, y'all got into it. You were hands on since it was pretty easy for you to get there. You know, it's possible that people who live as close as you did to this first investment property may have just said, "Oh, the GC knows what he's doing," and maybe he does. But I think there's a lot of value in, you know, seeing what the materials cost, seeing what how things work, seeing how much the labor is supposed to be, going to the store and just kind of being involved and like you said, putting in some sweat equity. So I'm sure, you know, being that involved in the process has helped you and will definitely help you in the future. So that's really cool, man. Awesome. So tell us about what happened going forward. So you got that property, you renovated it, and what was next after that?
So shortly after that, we found another duplex in the area, and we went after it, man. I think it was the purchase price was like $25K for the duplex. But again, so our strategy is multifamilies. I love multifamily because if you have one unit vacant, the other door will pay for all the mortgage, you know, insurance and all the other miscellaneous expenses. So that's why I love multifamily, and the other unit is just cash flow. And so we went out after this duplex, and the purchase price was $25K, and we put another $20,000 construction loan in that as well because both sides needed some work. One side needed a little bit more work than the other, but I was aggressively and happy, you know, to tackle this because we already did our first investment property with a construction loan, so we're doing our next one. And so immediately I'm trying to figure out how can we cut costs. You know, we need to figure out the cut costs. So I'm staying alongside the GC, and I'm down there every weekend making sure everything gets done in a timely manner because we want to get this unit turned over as quick as possible. And so, like I said, the purchase price was $25K. We put a $20,000 construction loan in it. We all in for $45K. And I believe the down payment was like $5,000 around there. And we came to the closing with that. But the good thing about this property got appraised for, I believe, $55,000. And so we got $10K of equity already just sitting in the piggy bank. And so we can eventually use this equity as a piggy bank play for another property one day. But that was the next journey after getting that second investment property.
Awesome. And where how many units are you two at now?
So I have 11 residential doors and one commercial.
Nice. And what's the time period? Like when did you get the first one? When did you get the first one?
So I started my investment journey, my first personal property, I got it in April of 2018. And then the first investment property, I got it, I want to say June of 2018.
Wow. So you said 11 residential, one commercial, right?
Yes.
Wow. So 12 in about like a year and a half. That's really cool, man. Tell me more about the commercial space. We haven't really had a guest dive too deep into commercial space they have. Can you tell us more about that?
Okay. Yeah. Oh, the commercial space is, I'm getting ready to open up a restaurant down south. And it's more so like a cafe style. And so what it's going to be is it's going to be a cafe style restaurant, and it's going to be a meat market and a small format store. And so we'll have those three things combined into that restaurant. We have everything for the most part sectioned off. You know, so I'll break down the deal a little bit. I purchased that property for, I want to say, $165K. And it sits on an acre. It's a big lot. And the previous owner had it. They had an ice cream shop in it years ago, and then they started renting it out to some people that had a restaurant in it. And so we purchased that for them for $165, and that property got appraised for $265. So we got 100 equity. And so this is the ARP. So what we did was we put a 30 by 30 building on the back of the existing building. So that made it, I think it was 1,300, like 2,200 square foot after we added that kitchen to it. And so the kitchen is where all the cooking will be done in the back part of it. And then in the front part of it, it'll be one part will be the small store format store. And then it'll be like a little meat section where we'll sell meat, frozen meat and vegetables. And then the other side will be where the people can sit down and eat if they want to eat in the restaurant.
Wow. That is incredible. Did you get a construction loan on that one as well?
Yes. So we get a construction loan on this property as well. And so we put, I think we did about 70K in construction on this property to get it up and running.
Wow. That's amazing, man. So I have a couple questions. There's one from previously that I don't want to forget. So can you talk to us about, so something that I've seen a lot online and just have talked to different people about is LLCs being able to get loans, especially those that are pretty new. How did that work for you for the first investment property? How were you able to get lending being with a fairly new LLC?
So how I was able to get lending was going through the bank, and then by me having a W-2 job and they seeing my W-2 income, that made them feel a little bit more comfortable. So that's why I tell a lot of people that's investing in the real estate and still working, while you're still working, try to get as many assets as possible, because banks feel a little bit more comfortable by knowing that you having that W-2 job, that you getting for sure money every month. And that if the tenant doesn't pay rent, then you could dig into your personal money and pay the mortgage. So the underwriter feels a little bit more comfortable in that process. And so that's what saved me, you know, when I first started my LLC, just having that steady W-2 income and showing that on that paperwork.
Got you. Did you have to do a personal guarantee on those at all? Or did they kind of just say, you know, this guy's running this LLC, but we see his income. If anything goes wrong, we feel he should be able to cover, and that was it.
Yeah. No, I didn't have a guarantee. Wow. Partner, we do everything 50-50. So I believe the bank just felt a little bit more comfortable by us having W-2 incomes and then with our incomes together, you know, and basically the DTI, debt to income ratio, all that portfolio, that made sure that we could pay the note if push comes to shove and we don't have anything. As far as tenants.
Wow. That's very insightful, man. I appreciate you diving into that because, I mean, I don't know, everybody I kind of have been speaking to or looking online, people seem to think you can't, that you can't do it, but now we know that you can. So I appreciate that, man. And then my next question is just regarding the commercial space. Tell us more about why you decided to get into the commercial space and also why you decided to, you know, structure it the way you are with like the particular businesses that'll be a part of.
Man, so I always wanted to, you know, open up a restaurant. That was kind of a go-to. And so when you look at real estate is everything. And so that's one of the things I love about it. And so I knew that this restaurant would be in the prime time area, which it is, and then the audience that we have, you know, would love it. And so that's kind of what kind of sparked my idea to it. I did the economics. I ran the area. I studied the area for practically almost 6 to 7 months and then just talked to a lot of people, got a feel, you know, you know, what they like, what they don't like. And then I also kind of studied the business that was currently there and seeing the pros and cons of what I can do better, you know, than whenever I actually take over that space. And so that kind of pushed my idea, and it was, you know, it's going to be a heck of a cash flow cow whenever it gets up and running fully, probably after the first year or so, you know, getting everything stable. But it was a perfect investment for me to get into and tackle in this market.
Definitely. That's amazing. Just out of curiosity, what kind of food is going to be there?
So it's going to be soul food, man.
Okay.
Nice. And the crazy thing, we're going to change it up a little bit. So next door is an apartment complex. It's about 20 units, and there's a lot of Mexicans stay over there. So we're going to do a Mexican soul food dish, man. We're preparing right now. I'm pretty excited about it, but we're going to change it up a little bit. But for the most part, it's going to be good soul food.
That's amazing. Wow. That's what I really like about that is, you know, you have the residentials and it puts you in position to explore other ideas and take a different kind of risk. And you also did a lot of research just figuring out what would fit right in that particular community with that commercial space. And like you said, you're already looking at the folks who are living beside it and already figuring out a way to cater to them. And I think it just speaks to the fact that real estate gives you options. Ownership gives you options. You know, you purchase the space, now you can figure out how to use it. And hey, in the future, you can take it to the next phase or, you know, perhaps build more on that particular land. So, I mean, that's really cool, man. That is really cool.
Appreciate it.
Definitely. So when is all that slated to, like, is it still kind of going through renovations and such? Like, at what stage are you at right now?
Yes, yeah, so I'm in the renovation stage right now. I'm looking at a hard date, you know, to open up late February. I'm going to get everything done, but I got one more inspection to do on the addition in the kitchen. And for the most part, I did all the rehab myself, went in and did a few things on the existing building. But on, you know, the addition, then we had a GC, and he worked everything out for the most part. And so the crazy thing is the GC is my mentor. And me and my mentor are in on a deal together.
Wow.
So for the most part, he's been letting me GC everything as well.
Wow.
You know, so he pretty much just gave me the contacts, gave me everybody. And so for the most part, I just been working that thing. And if I had any questions or he'll step in as needed. But it's been pretty exciting. So I kind of branched out into, you know, I look at the GC as being like the NFL of real estate. Like everybody end goal to build from ground up.
Yeah.
And so it's been amazing, man. It just kind of step off in my comfort zone and trying to take charge and then learning a little bit more, getting my hands dirty as well too. You know, and then looking at materials and the different things like that. So, but like I said, February, late February will be a hard date. We'll be opening up and it's coming along pretty good, man. We're waiting. I'll probably get my second inspection from electrical and plumbing this week. And then after I get that, then I'll be able to sheetrock and foam everything up in that sheetrock. So pretty excited.
Definitely. Is that in Lake Charles or in Shreveport?
It's in Lake Charles.
Okay. Man, that's amazing. One thing that I've picked up and I've noticed is that you're very hands-on and you want to learn everything there is about all your investments. And you remember you talking in the beginning, you know, you kind of going down the Shreveport, doing a little, getting your hands dirty a little bit, you know, getting materials, different things like that, to where you're at now, where your mentor is kind of handing it off to you and helping you to gain that GC experience, which, right. I mean, who knows, maybe eventually that can be just another arm of your business, you know, in addition to being an investor. So, I mean, it sounds like you are really picking up some skills, and then the next phase, you know, you'll have a restaurant and, you know, you're working with a staff and all those things. So it sounds like the real estate is enabling you to do other things and add other parts of your business, man.
Yep.
It is.
That's amazing. That's amazing. So for your properties, is it a mix between Lake Charles and Shreveport?
Yeah, so I have a few in Lake Charles. Most of them are in Shreveport, but I have a few in my hometown in Monroe, Louisiana.
Got it.
For the most part, my portfolio is multifamily. I only have a few single-family properties.
Got it. And the multifamily, are they mostly is it mostly duplexes out there?
Yes, it's a lot of duplexes. Well, all my multifamilies in Shreveport, and it's a lot of multifamilies out there. Mm-hmm. Triplexes and quadplexes as well. Actually, I just acquired a triplex in November. I think November of last year, and nice. that was my biggest unit so far.
Yeah.
But looking to tackle it, man. But it's a lot of multifamily out there up north in Shreveport, Louisiana.
That's awesome, man. So since you kind of spread across several different cities, do you self-manage currently, or do you have a property manager at those properties?
Yeah, so, man, I have a property manager. I self-managed up until, I think, 9 or 10 units. And then once I was able to kind of, what I wanted to do was I wanted to learn the process and get in the ground and learn everything I need to know. You know, so whenever I have a property manager, I know not long it takes. I know, you know, what measures and what all it takes to get everything done. It needs to be done. And so I got that experience first, and then we reached out, me and my partner, and got a property manager. And we already had a system in place prior to her coming on board to our team. We have a maintenance crew out there in Shreveport. They get called out for any maintenance issues and related to those properties. And so we brought the property manager in the third quarter of last year. And the relationship been going pretty good so far. She's in the process of growing her business along with us growing our business. So we're just looking forward to, you know, growing our relationship and the business together.
That's awesome, man. And talk to us more about what the partnership looks like between you and your partner. Like kind of, how does it work? So kind of, do you each have responsibilities? Do you split up some of the stuff? Like what does it work like with you?
Okay. So the partnership, for the numbers aspect of it is 50-50. And then, so me and my partner, we have job duties that's like allocated. And so like we big on one voice. And so as far as the property management aspect, the property manager only hears from me. And then as far as the banking and the maintenance team, for the most part, they refer, the maintenance will refer to property management. But sometimes the second head of command is my partner. So they reach out to him if anything happens and they can't get in touch with the PM. And so when it regards to all the bank and the relationship with the bank, my partner handles all that. And then everything else is just kind of divvied up. So we don't be focused on the same thing for the most part. Like we big on being efficient and effective as possible. And so we both tackle on different things. And like it could change. Like we wanna kind of change our roles in the next few years and kind of get a little bit more experience in those areas. But it's been working out amazing so far.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So where do you go from here? You know, you're at over 10 units right now, and you got the commercial space that's going to be up and running in the next month or so. So what's next? What's next for you in the future?
Man, I just want to keep expanding, you know, in real estate. And in the next few years, I want to sit for my GC license and, you know, become a general contractor. I feel like that's the next level of real estate, and you can control the market and expenses and pricing and the whole nine yards. So that's a table that we want to sit at as real estate investors if you want to get on that avenue. For the most part, a GC is basically a project manager. You know, he oversees the project. You can get your hands dirty if you want to, but you subcontract for the most part everything out. And so I feel like that's going to be the next phase of it and continue scaling up. I'm looking to acquire more units this year. I put out a goal for 20, so we're going to try to hit it in 2020, hit 20 units. So I'm looking forward to doing that, and I want to, you know, scale up to apartment complexes, you know, in the future. So looking forward to that, man, and be able to get more financial freedom, you know, in the real estate. And then I'm invested in other businesses as well. I have an entertainment company. I also have a tax business. Like I said, my dad have done taxes for 17 plus years. And so, you know, after I graduated college, he brought me on the board with him. We have a 50-50 partnership. And so I do taxes as well too. And so that's the part about it with me and you real estate investors, you know, we have to, you know, learn it because we have a lot of write-offs and the different things like that. We want to make sure, you know, that we're writing off everything we can because Amazon, they made billions of dollars and they ain't pay nothing in taxes. You know, so we want to understand that infrastructure and that model. And so by me having that tax background, you know, it's helped me, you know, to understand a little bit more on the business and the processes and, you know, what I can write off and what I can't and that in the whole nine yards. And so also that sits up under the restaurant is an investment company that I have with my mentor. And so we're looking to invest in startups and different things and invest in, you know, different cash cows that we could, you know, potentially make a lot of rental money or portfolio money as well.
Wow, that's amazing. What I really like about that is it seemed everything you're doing complements each other. So you have the entertainment company, you have the tax company, which directly helps with the real estate. And then in the future, planning to get your GC license. You know, I just see it seems like you're adding, I mean, in the future, I could very much see you having a huge company with each one of those streams under it. You know, and right. You're learning the dirt. You're learning everything now. You're getting your hands dirty. So in the future, as you grow, as you get to, you know, 50, 60, 70 units, you know what everything is supposed to look like. So you can hand off the playbook to somebody else and continue to work on growing the business. So I think that's really cool, man. And also working with your dad too, you know, and partnering with him, I'm sure has helped. Just having two people help to, you know, help the business to grow and help things to continue to develop. But it's great. I mean, you have different streams coming in and it sounds like it's just continuing to grow, man.
Yeah, it is, man. Definitely.
So what is your 9-to-5 background?
Okay. So I work for a chemical plant company and I'm in operations management where I oversee a few units at the plant.
Got it. And was that kind of related to your undergrad major?
Yes. So it touched bases. My undergrad was in accounting and I got a minor in supply chain management. Nice. And so on the supply chain management aspect, this is where it comes into place where I'm in my operations management career that I'm currently in right now. And I also got my MBA in international business.
Nice.
In December of 18. So it kind of plays hands in hand, you know, with the role that I have right now too, because it's an international company. It's based out of Johannesburg, South Africa.
Oh, wow. That's amazing, man. Where did you go to undergrad and grad school?
So I attended grad at Southern University and in college in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And I got my MBA from LSU Shreveport.
Nice. That's great, man. What has been your most challenging tenant experience?
My most I probably could say recently.
Yeah.
You know, for the most part. So, like, you're going to have a lot of turnover, but I had a tenant that, you know, paid a deposit and said they was going to move in on this date. But they contacted us back and said, you know, hey, we can't no longer move in. Can we have our deposit back? And so I was kind of battling back and forth trying to figure out, you know, was I going to give the deposit back or not? But I had to look in my contract and everything they signed that it's not a stipulation or a date that they had to be in the unit prior to getting the refund. So I had to get a refund back. So I would say that was the most challenging because we didn't even get them in there yet. And it was already, you know, saying a challenge, but for the most part, all my rental portfolio, they pretty much self-efficient. They run on its own because like I said, we did construction loans and everything for the most part is new for the tenants. So we don't really have as many problems as we should.
That's good. And what are some challenges that you faced along the way as you've been growing your portfolio and growing your businesses?
Man, I would say that the only being a long distance investor, you know, just using OPT, other people's time, man, for the most part, you got to have a trustworthy team and a team that's out there that you know to get the job done. So, like I say, I'm pretty hands-on. Sometimes I got to learn to let everybody else do their job, but sometimes I like to get in and just get it done.
Yeah.
But as we continue to grow, you know, and expand, it's, you know, we got to get more people on that's like-minded and like us too. So we're just looking at the big end result and, you know, continue to build our maintenance team and, you know, have people out there that's boots on the ground and that's ready to work.
Definitely. And as far as financing, have you used different strategies or is it mostly just construction loans?
for the most part, it's just construction loans, but I have used owner financing on a few deals as well.
Can you talk to us more about the owner financing and kind of how what your approach was to that? Something we've spoken about before, but it's always good to hear different perspectives and how different people attack that particular strategy.
Okay. So owner financing, that's really my go-to, you know, for all investors that's selling or anyone that's selling a property. You know, for the most part, they are really trying to get rid of it pretty fast, and they won't do owner financing. But some people that just don't want to take on that burden of, you know, that big lump sum and have to pay taxes on it, they look at getting that money every month. Basically, owner financing is basically whoever the owner is the bank in that scenario. And so to touch bases on this deal, I believe I purchased it for 27K. It's a single family. But the good thing about it, it's in Monroe, my hometown. It was already, for the most part, fully rehabbed and ready to go. I didn't have to do any work to it. The previous owner did all the work. And so we came to a price point. We negotiated back and forth, you know, to see where can we come to a median at. And we came to it at 27. And I had to pay, I want to say, 5% down. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, no interest. And I just paid that over 7 years. So after 7 years, that property would be paid off. But for the most part, I would suggest everybody to go through owner finance, you know, so you don't have to go through the bank and then it won't hit your credit. That was a good thing about it. And then it's just easy cash flow that you get every month and you making those payments, you know, to the owner, which is the bank in that scenario.
Wow. And how would you suggest marketing or finding owner finance deals? Do you go through a realtor or do you kind of just do direct mail? What has worked for you?
For the most part, man, I got that deal through word of mouth and somebody that I knew. But you can look through Craigslist, Facebook Marketplace, you know, even on the MLS list. Like, some people that have the properties on the MLS just want to just get that exposure. But they could be possibly interested in owner financing. I tell everybody, just ask. The only thing they can say is no. They can say yes or no. And so by you asking that could probably be, you know, another avenue that they probably didn't even think about. You all just come to a price point that you all both agree on. But for the most part, just word of mouth. You could do direct mailing as well. I haven't done it yet. I touched on that aspect. But just the word of mouth and just getting on Facebook Marketplace, Craigslist, and then just, you know, reaching out to different people. If I see people in a store like Home Depot and I see they getting materials, different things. I say, hey, you're in real estate. You know, you have any properties? If you want to sell anything, just let me know. I give them my card. Just build relationships, man. This business is built on relationships.
Definitely. That's awesome, man. I like the fact that you just kind of, you know, killing two birds with one stone. You know, you're in Home Depot, you know, checking people out, checking materials out, but also checking people out and networking too. That's really cool, man. What is one thing you would say to a newbie who is interested in real estate, but maybe they're not really sure what to do first, or they're kind of scared? Like, what would your advice be to somebody like that?
Man, just get started. You know, a lot of people look at, you know, when it's going to be the perfect time to invest and get started, you know, in real estate or any entrepreneurship endeavor that they want to do. It'll never be the right time. You know, you just need to get started. And I love the fact that I see a lot of people out here now that's doing group economics. Like, that's smart. That's the best way to do it. You know, if you don't have all the funds that's needed, you know, to start and put on a down payment on whatever you investment that you're looking to move forward towards, you know, bring your friends or family members involved that's like-minded. You all have the same common goal and end goal. And you all come together and start saving for 6 to 8 months or a year and put a certain amount of money aside, you know, and, you know, go after whatever you want to do. But I would just say get started. Like, it's no time like the present. And it's 2020. I advise everybody to, you know, they need to have some kind of asset working for them.
Definitely. Yeah, it's something that's very important. You know, just getting started, you know, you'll figure everything else out along the way. You know, like you, for example, you got your single family home and like, oh man, maybe I should have got a duplex, but you're like, I can still monetize this thing. and you figured that out, and the snowball just went from there. And then, are there any books and or resources that helped you to gain knowledge along the way?
Yeah, man. Rich Dad, Poor Dad. That was the book that started my investment career. I know a lot of people talk about it. It helped a lot of people. But, man, that book just changed my life dramatically. Mm-hmm. And it just opened my mind and changed my mindset to a lot of things. And that book right there kicked off everything. Actually, I read that book a little bit before I got my first personal property. And it just, after reading it, I said, man, I need to get a property ASAP. But with that, Poor Dad, You Grow Rich, 48 Laws of Power, a lot of books. I read quite a few books that's helped and changed my mindset.
Definitely. I just started reading Think and Grow Rich yesterday, actually. Man, and to think that that book was, still in the first chapter, but to think that that book was made in, like, I think the 1930s or something is just crazy. Crazy. I think about the part where the guy who wanted to work with Thomas Edison, and he basically, in short, he didn't know anything, but he just showed up and said, I want to work with you. My goal is to be a partner with you. And he started from the ground up and became a millionaire, you know. But that just goes to say there are so many. I'm excited for what's next in that book. But, you know, I think a lot of the books you mentioned are great. And a lot of it is just about mindset changing. You know, like for me, I read Rich Dad Poor Dad about a year ago, and it changed my mind completely. Like the way I think about money, the way I thought about, you know, trying to finance a deal, where to find money. It really will rewire your brain, man, and have you thinking on a whole another level. So it's really good that those are some things that have helped you. And are there any other podcasts?
On Think and Grow Rich, that guy, he interviewed millionaires and different people. So that's kind of how he got the, you know, the different concepts. Yeah. And there's another book out there that's more so for, you know, our ethnic background that a guy wrote. I can't think of his name, but it's a version of Think and Grow Rich that it more so correlates to us. Yeah. I can't think of the name right now, but quite a few people told me about it. I want to go out and read it one day.
Definitely. That's amazing, man. And are there any other podcasts or any other resources that you would recommend that helped you out?
Yeah, man. I use the bigger podcasts all the time. You know, the Millionaire Podcast, Todd Millionaire. I listen to a lot of podcasts, man. Yeah. That podcast kind of got me, you know, investing in the real estate as well, too. I get in my car, head to work or the gym or the whole nine yards. I'm always listening to a podcast, you know, for the most part. Versus music nowadays.
Yeah, definitely. It's crazy. I did the same thing with me, you know, and it's crazy because the thing is music, we can memorize the music. We can be familiar with the songs. So I feel like listening to podcasts, it's the same thing. Like your brain, I mean, it feels like your brain just absorbs it. And even if you may not see it manifest right away, it might change the way you look at something. It might change the way you think about something. So I try to tell people, if you listen to a podcast, at some points it's good, you know, to have a notes and write specific stuff you could take from it, but you're going to absorb some of that stuff and your mindset will change as you listen to more podcasts about what it is you're interested in. What do you say?
I say training your unconscious mind. I'm big on that. Like if you keep listening to the same thing or, you know, what I do is I write my goals down every day. And I was telling my friend a few weeks ago, you know, I was looking at the fourth quarter and I was like, man, I hit this, that goal, like unknowingly, because I write them down every day. I'm training my unconscious mind. You know, it's just amazing, man. What you feed into your mind is exactly what feedback you're going to get in the end result.
I agree with that wholeheartedly, man. Yeah, I'm straight podcast. I listen to a little music in the beginning, get me pumped in, but after work, going to the gym, whatever, it's podcast, you know. So I'm all for that, and I try to preach that to people. Even if you start small, you know, let's say you listen to music, you have let's say an hour commute. Listen to 15 minutes of a podcast of interest, and just build it up over time. You know, you don't have to go. Now everybody can't jump right in, but do it gradually. And I mean, it'll help. It'll help, man. So I agree with you. I'm definitely a big fan of that. Awesome. Well, man, thank you. Thank you so much. Let us know how people can reach you if they want to talk to you more about what you got going on and stay connected with you. Where can they reach you?
Okay. They can reach me on all platforms, on Twitter and Instagram at InvestorEB17. That's InvestorEB17 on Instagram and on Twitter.
Perfect. Perfect. Awesome. Well, thank you so much again, man. And thank you to everyone for listening to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue. You can find us on Instagram at Black Real Estate Dialogue, on Twitter at Bred Podcast, B-R-E-D Podcast, and all the information how you can connect with Emmanuel will be in the show notes. Thank you all again.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.